United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Good day. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobert, and today my guest is Professor Emeritus of Stewardship and Parish Ministry, Dr. William Avery from United Lutheran Seminary. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you.
Yeah, although I should say to our listening audience, you're no stranger to this program, but we're glad to have you here again.
Thank you.
Today, I ask you to look at and reflect on the past year's top stories in religion for you in 2023. And so I'm going to ask you, to identify your topics and in terms of your concerns, and then we'll go into in depth onto each of them. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay. What do you think and what do you feel are the top stories from the past year?
Yes, I think everyone's top story has to be Hamas's brutal terror attack in Israel and Israel's escalating military response. That would be number one.
Okay.
For me, number two would be the exodus of people from churches, especially younger generations. Now, this exodus has been going on since 1960. But it's become an avalanche in the last few years. And number three is a kind of subset of that, clergy burnout because of the lack of collaboration between pastor and congregation working together. So those are my three.
Okay, well, you've given us a lot to talk about. So I'd like to go back to your first issue, and that is Hamas and the brutality that has taken place in the Middle East.
Okay.
For our listening audience, how did this begin?
Well, it goes back to the beginning of the Bible, as we know. Israel or Jews' tension with their Canaanite neighbors, who are the Palestinians now, go from the beginning of the Bible, from Abraham on. It got changed when Islam became an international religion in the 700s AD. And then if we go now down to the just to present, in after World War I, Palestinian territory was never a state. It was always actually run by Britain at that time. And of course, we had the Holocaust through the 30s, and then the World War II, and the West was triumphant in that war, and as a reward of what the Jews had been asking for since 70 AD, when their country was destroyed, they asked to become a state. And that was granted in 1948.
Right, I remember that. I remember hearing about that.
Right, and the Palestinians, of course, were living there, and they weren't granted a state. So now you have Israel been granted a state, the Palestinians not. And the tensions really escalated. So Hamas is a terrorist organization designed to drive the state of Israel out of that part of the world and restore it with a Palestinian state. And it now seems more and more that Israel wants to just destroy any resistance from the Palestinians.
Okay, when you talk about Hamas, what religious entity do they represent, do you think?
They're a radical movement that I think of Islam, of the Islam religion. Now, you have to remember that the central teaching of the Quran, that's their Bible, is peace
right.
And love. hot war. This is an extremist absolute who feel that the whole world has to become part of the Islam religious community, and they'll use force to do it. And they're doing it locally to try to drive Israel out, because that's where Hamas has their power. It is the main military power in the Palestinian territories, and especially Gaza.
No, go on.
Okay. Yeah. Gaza is just a little territory of 20 miles long and a little over 6 miles wide. But now this has escalated because to the West Bank, and now I just read this morning that Israel has sent a military attack into Lebanon. So it's engulfing more and more of the whole Middle East. And, you know, since each one wants to destroy the other, this idea of two states in this territory is anathema. It's to both parties.
Yeah, and that, well, I've heard about, you know, the desire for the two-state resolution to this, and yet no side seems to be advocating that or settling for that, and it seems to me that this is, becomes a very frustrating international problem.
I have no solution. As I said, the animosity goes back thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years. It takes a mind and an emotion and a spirit greater than mine to think of a peaceful solution.
Right. The other thing that comes to mind for me is that I think in the past, I mean, there have been many people who have been pro-Israel. That's a general statement, I know. But it seems to me that with this conflict, it seems to be a shift in the views of the general public towards Israel. Am I just guessing this, or is there something, or might you say something different?
Okay, I do think that there is a shift. I wouldn't try to put a percentage. I think there are a lot of people who still support Israel without reservation. But I think because of how brutal and how many people have been made homeless and how many have been, we're talking laid, just people have been killed, that the brutality and the extent of their response has turned some of it away from Israel. One of the differences, and I remember this vividly from my one visit, and when I visited 25 years ago, there was the same tension. It was over the West Bank, particularly in those days. But Israel is a form of democracy. And therefore, in Israel, you can object. And so there are many Israelites who also are opposed. Not the majority, but there is a strong minority who are very much opposed to this military response by Israel. That can happen. I don't think the same dissension happens in the Palestinian states.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I know that looking at the television, I think emotionally, I know that I react to seeing the devastation, the destruction of buildings, particularly the lives of these children who are hurt and separated from their families. It really gets to you.
It really does.
That's right. Well, thank you. Thank you for giving us a glimpse of that perspective as you reflect on the issues in religion from last year. I'd like to move on to your second concern or thoughts on the exiting of people from the church. And you, at the intro, you said that this is happening since 1960. I'm surprised by that year or the number of years that has been going on, but that it's increased more recently.
Yep. Well, I know from my lifelong research as a professor that the highest church attendance was in 1962. And then it began to decline. It began to decline, especially because of civil rights movement. The church wasn't up on that because of the exodus from the inner city to the suburbs, because of even ecology. That the church was in the past. It wasn't leading. It wasn't where the people were. And so the exodus started in the 60s, but it kind of just trickled down. And particularly in the evangelical churches, who actually increased during the early part of this, while the tradition. Right. But now all churches are in decline, especially among its young people. And I think I know some of the factors, although it's very complex.
Yeah, please explain, or please expand on that. I'm anxious to hear.
Well, I think there's a greater value on individualism mm-hmm. over on being your authentic self, and they desire personal freedom. I think there's a huge growth in spirituality, but apart from religion, it's a spirituality that's individualized to match this personal freedom, and it doesn't include going to church. I think it's an increasing conviction that you can be good without being religious. I can go on if you want to.
You said that the spirituality, there's been an increase in spirituality, but right. what form does that take? Or is there a form?
We had a name, we used someone's name for it. I won't mention the name right now.
Okay.
It could be Jane, it could be John. It's their own individual spirituality, which they develop on their own without being prodded from the church, without being prodded by the rules, the laws, the sins, and so forth. They can form it on their own, and it's very individual. And I know many people like that. One of the people I know, for example, never goes to church, but she will tell you how spiritual, this happens to be a woman, but it could be a man, how spiritual she is, and she does. And you can see private signs of her spirituality, but she joins no Bible study group, no church, nothing like that, because she's so focused on it has to fit me and not be satisfied by her.
I understand that piece, but it also says that the church will continue to decline because if young families are into this individualism, which means that they transfer that transfer that onto their children.
Right, exactly. And, you know, just going around churches as I have, for the last generation and a half, I'm amazed at how many churches have absolutely no children. Absolutely none. And that means no parent age. It's all us gray folks, gray haired folks, you know, with our walkers and our problems.
Oh, exactly. And supplied a few places in the past year, and I've also heard from friends in other congregations outside of Pennsylvania, and the concern is there are no children. There right. At worship, some places will have a children's sermon or children's time, and there are very few, if any, children present.
Exactly. And this is not, we think of it as just in context of the United States, but this is a worldwide issue. Participation in any religious activity is declining rapidly all across the globe.
Indeed, indeed. I know from my travels in France and in Germany, I saw, as you said, senior citizens at worship, but not the children, not the young people, and not the babies.
Right. France and Germany are two classic illustrations of churches that are in the steepest decline in attendance. So it's not just the United States, it's worldwide.
Right. And I think that's, it's helpful to those in the United States to know that this is not just located in our hemisphere and in our northern hemisphere, but that this is a global issue.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. I want to push us to your third issue in terms of religion in the past year, and that is, you mentioned clergy burnout.
Right. And that is to say that many pastors are finding great difficulty getting cooperative working with the lay people and them. And it becomes much less satisfied because people are busy. Volunteerism, particularly among young people, is down. And in fact, the statistic, this comes from a research organization called Barna, is that 40%, which is a huge amount of the clergy today, are in danger of burnout. 40%. And just to show you why I'm listing this today, their research shows in 2015, at least 72% of the pastors thought they were very satisfied with their work. In 7 years to 2022, it's dropped to 52%. This 20% drop in just 7 years is huge. Huge.
Yeah, but what do you attribute this decline?
Well, I think there's more conflict in congregations. I just think the escalation in extremism in all facets of life is a very, very, very important aspect of this change. I mean, you know, we have extremism in everything that we didn't have.
Right.
Politically, in our daily life, in our congregations. One concrete example. In 1982, President Ronald Reagan was shot.
Right.
And his chief political foe, Tip O'Neill, who was head of the House of Representatives, they were political foes, remember, but they were such good friends that Tip O'Neill rushed to the hospital, and President Reagan was much more seriously injured than we were led to believe, and prayed and read Bible with Ronald Reagan. I don't see that happening today and the things that are happening right now politically, but that also is reflected in all other aspects of life, including the church. That makes it harder for pastors to work.
Well, with this issue growing, it seems to me that in terms of people feeling called to public ministry as pastors or deacons or diaconal ministers, that we're going to see a decline in seminary education.
We've already seen it, and you know this better than I, so I don't know why I'm answering this question, because you know as much about it as I do. But yes, fewer and fewer people are entering ordained ministry, and as I said, it's the younger pastors and the women who especially are questioning their calls more and leaving their calls more frequently for other occupations.
Okay. Well, on that note, what do you see as the hope as we are into this new year? I know this is not a question I posed to you before, but if you have any thoughts in terms of hope for 2024.
Okay, well, there's always hope where there is the Spirit, where there is the belief in God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And there are numerous examples of exceptions to that rule. I don't think I want to mention specific congregations, but you and I belong to a congregation that is an exception to that rule, that is growing.
True.
With young people, that is teeming with openness and love. And we're just, there are many of them. And that's where our hope is, that with the Holy Spirit, we're never dead. There's always the new day. And there will always be these pastors and these lay people leading it. And that always gives me hope.
Well, on that note, it's been a pleasure to hear you say that we always live in hope, and hopefully for our listening audience that that as we enter this new year and as we're engaged in this new year, that we look forward to seeing more signs of hope as we live out our daily God-given lives. I want to thank you, Dr. Avery, for sharing your insights into the concerns that you saw for the past year in religion, and we hope that we'll hear from you again.
Thank you very much, Dr.
For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. My guest today has been Dr. William Avery, Professor Emeritus of Stewardship and Parish Ministry of United Lutheran Seminary. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. All opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.